Right, so this is Perik Dalet, Mishnah Aleph. In Hebrew, it's the seven Ushpizichta, or it's Aramaic. And if anybody has a better translation of the word Ushpizichta than tenants, for me, I'd be happy to reconsider and revisit that translation. So this is the Psicha, the Perik Dalet. Preface to the fourth chapter. In this chapter, we are going to look at the seven double letters which form pathways between the sefirot from top to bottom. And just as the three letters, Aleph Mem Shin, known as the three mothers, Hen Nesivos Miyamin El Smol, are pathways from left to right, Bein Chochma Ubina, between Chochma and Bina, between Chesed and Gevura, between Netzach and Hoid. As we explained above in the third chapter, in the first Mishnah, there is a difference. Hachilik Bein Sholesh Imos L'Sheva Kufula is the difference between those seven verticals and the three horizontals, Hutchunas Hora Sheyesh Bekufulos, that in the doubles, in these vertical letters that we are going to be examining in this chapter, there is an aspect of bad, of evil. Which we don't find there by the three mothers. And about doubles in general, we learn in the Medrash. Why on the second day of creation in the story of Genesis does the text not say, and God saw that it was good, as he says, Vayar lekim sa'or kitoiv, God saw the light was good, and then on day three it actually says twice, kitoiv. Reb Chanina oimer sheboi nivras machloikes. So Reb Chanina explains that on the second day, God divided. And as soon as you have division, you have machloikes, you have arguments and differences of opinion and so on, you have antagonism. Shenema vayhi mavdil b'maim namaim, because the rikia, the firmament, divides among the water and the water. And so as soon as you have machloikes, as soon as you have division, that's not kitoiv, that's no longer good. So Reb Tevyumi adds, im machloikes shili tikune shel oilam ili yeshuvoi ein boi kitoiv, if the Torah is telling us that a division, a split for the sake of evolution, of creation, is so important to the architecture of the universe that the universe couldn't really be built without it. Nevertheless, the Torah refrains from saying it's good because it's a machloikis, it's a division. If such an important division, a vital, crucial division, is not good, then just imagine machloikis shilirvuvoi al achas kamu v'kam. So a machloikis, a split, a division, a fight, just for the sake of having a division, which isn't for the upkeep of the world. Just think how bad that is. Yeah. So then we find that the havdalah, the separation between the upper and the lower, is considered by the Medrash to be like a machloikis, like an argument. And we learn in the Gemara B'Issa or in the Mishnah, kol machloikis shilishem shemayim soifo lehiskayim. Every machloikis, every argument that is for the sake of heaven, it will continue. She'ena l'shem shemayim, but if the argument is not l'shem shemayim, it's not for the sake of heaven, ein soifo lehiskayim, it's not going to last anyway. Umashma, so from that Mishnah, it would appear, even though it's impossible for the world to exist without havdola, without separation, without distinctions, and without splitting, nevertheless, in kolzeh toiv lekrin Allah, we don't call that aspect good. So, in the aspect of the double letters, we're going to find that there is an up and a down, whereas in the horizontal letters, that movement, that flow, because there's no flow through, they connect, Chochma and Bina connect, but with the vertical lines, there is a flow coming from Keter all the way to Malchut that flows like through a tree. But if we could imagine a tree where the flow moves both ways, both up from the roots to the leaves and also down from the leaves to the roots, so that we have a different dynamic. And just as the three letters Aleph, Mem, Shin each have a very particular character, and they also have aspects such as Ruach, Mayim, Esh, breath, water, and fire, so we find with each of the seven double letters, which are Beis, Gimel, Dalet, Chof, Pei, Resh, and Tav, Tchunim Yucheles, they each have a separate aspect. So we have Chaim, Oisha, Chain, life, wealth, grace, and so on. And just as we have found that there are personalities that correspond to the elements of fire, water, and air, which were Sora, Chava, Sora, and Miriam, so we will find in the seven letters that are going to be expounded upon in this chapter, Yesh Ishius Makbilois, there are personalities that represent and showcase those letters. And they are Yocheved, the mother of Miriam, Aaron, and Moshe, Rus, the Moabite princess who became Jewish, married Boaz, and was the great-grandmother of David HaMelech, Rivka, the mother of Yaakov and Esav, Leah and Rochel, the two wives of Yaakov from which the 12 tribes descend, Tamar, who was Yehuda's daughter-in-law and later became his wife, and Esther, Hamalka, Queen Esther. L'kol achas mem yesh yisoid k'mo shizba, and each one of them represents elements and foundations and primal Jewish ideas, as will be explained. So this is the first Mishnah. Sheva kufulo is seven double letters. Beis gimel dalet chaf pei resh tav. Misnagois b'shtei l'shoinois. And they're expressed in two tongues, two ways. Yesoidon, and their elements are chayim, life, shalom, peace, chochma, wisdom, oisher, wealth, chen, grace, zera, seed, Memshola, dominion. So, let's have a look at these words, which are very common. I mean, everybody knows what l'chaim. Chaim is life. Shalom. These are such common words and concepts that we basically never stop to ask ourselves where they come from and what other baggage they may be carrying. So, wherever possible here in the Sefer Yetzirah, what I've done is to find the first time a word appears in the Torah and, you know, use that as a jumping off, a springboard, because this is one of the rules that I heard from Shlomo, is that where a word appears for the first time in the Torah, that is its headquarters. So, the first time the word Chaim, and this is note number one, the first time the word Chaim appears in the Torah, it says, Vayitzer Hashem Elokim Esa'od Ha'odam, God created or formed man, Ofo Minhu Adama, dust of the earth, Vayipach Ba'apav Nishmas Chaim, and he blew into his nostrils the breath of life. Vayi Ha'odam L'nefesh Chayo, man became a living creature. So, She'afo Pisha B'sipim Ma'asabreshis Kvai Shtamash B'musag Ha'chai V'ha'chai, although in the story of Genesis that far, in chapter 1, for instance, we already encounter the idea of life and living, but we don't find the word Chaim. And interesting enough, Chaim is one of those words which has a double ending, like the word Mayim or Shemayim, which seems to have an implication beyond the singular. And it seems to me that the reason Chaim is associated with Adam is just as a person is, if infinite and eternal, because a person, a human being, is partly divine because of the divine soul that he has in him, which is God expressing himself through us. So that we have to look at life in the same way, that life is the expression of the divine. And that's why the text of Genesis doesn't use the word chayim until man is created, in order to underline and emphasize. And above in the first chapter, in the eighth Mishnah, Bianu Hachayim, we talked about the concept of life. What does it mean when we talk about Elohim Chayim, the living God? How can we apply such a thing to God when we understand life as being, you know, creation, conception, gestation, birth, growth, and then, you know, age and death? So how can we apply this and call God Elohim Chayim? So we said there in Mishnah Ches that Chayim, when we talk about the living God, we're talking about Emtzaus u'mishav letachlis hafokas rotzun haposhet, the means by which God brings his simple desire to pass, and the means by which God expresses his simple desire, which is for us, that the whole process, in other words, like saying God in process. Wherever God is in process, then we talk about Elohim Chayim. And God's process is the journey by which we become. V'chol toitzo'o v'olul, and every consequence and effect, shenitzrach l'matorah ha'hi, that is necessary to bring about the realization of God's simple desire, Kor Chayim, that's what we call life. Pirish Ruach Elohim Chayim, the spirit of the living God, then becomes the manifestation of God. So wherever God is manifest, that is the spirit of the living God. So then we understand Chayim here in these letters, the seven letters represent seven characteristics. One of them is Chayim, and by that, we don't mean anything but the manifestation of the divine and the coming, the happening, the realization of the simple desire. The second is Sholem. Everybody knows Sholem means peace, but that isn't the way that it's being understood here. V'yesoidoi, the very first time the word Sholem appears in the Torah, in last week's Sedra, when God says to Avram, "Va'alto tovoy el avisecho b'sholoim, you will come to your fathers in peace, tikove b'seiva tova, and you'll be buried at a ripe old age." Pirush Rashi el avisecho. So Rashi says, what does it mean? God is promising Avram that he will be gathered unto his ancestors, and so on. Oviv oved avodah zorah, his father's an idol worshiper, a pagan. What's the grace of Yichus of saying you'll be gathered unto your father? Avraham has become a Yid, and God is promising that he'll be gathered unto his ancestors. V'hum evasre sh'yova elov, and God is, you know, giving him the good news. So Rashi says, Lamdoch sh'osu terach tshuva, from here we learn that Terach repented of his idolatry and became a believer, and so Avraham is being good news. Given good news that you know, God says you will be gathered unto your father. The Pirush Ksava Kabbalah, in the commentary on the Torah called Ksava Kabbalah, he says there's another way of looking at it. Ve'efshel farish shehasha'orus nefesh benitchiusam achri chaya heaven halazu, the permanence of the existence of life after death. Liois. Because that is really what we desire. We desire, when our life ends, that we continue. And it's a very profound, it's a very human, almost definingly human longing, is for the process to continue. And for the permanence, for the belief we hope that we carry on. And so that becomes the general, you could say that is a universal human wish. And it's part of the reason that people live their life is because of the belief that they have in an afterlife. And those who try to perfect their life, it's because they believe in the eternity of the self or the soul. So that, the Ksav HaKabbalah says, that is called Avoy Secho. The word Avoy Secho that we translate as your fathers, that you will be gathered unto your fathers, he says, no, the word Avoy Secho doesn't mean fathers. V'Avoy Secho Shem Mifal, it is a word that describes your longing, your desire. Sheroso HaChefetz V'Harotzin. The word Avo means to desire. Akva Matzoni Shem Mizeh HaShoyrish Gam B'Kinei K'moi Iyoiv. Avi Ivchan Yivchan Iyoiv. We find that this I wish, there's a pasuk in Iyoiv, in Job. I wish that Job were tried. So, Avi Yibochein Iyoiv. Avi, my desire is. So therefore, if you read the word Avi instead of my father's, my desire, and you apply it here, God says to Avraham Avinu, Va'ato tovo el Avoy Secho, you will come to your desires in peace. So which means, God says to Avraham, Ato tovo el Anoyam Ho Elyon, you will come to the real sweetness, the supernal sweetness. Asha Olav Tisaveh, that which you have desired, and he gives the Yiddish zu dein erwünschungen, to that which you have wished upon yourself. So that's the Ksav HaKabbalah. So he's bypassing the problem of Terach, and we're not talking about Terach. God says to Avraham, Va'ato tov el Avosecho, you will come to your desire, b'sholoim, in peace. If that's the case, then the concept of peace needs another look. What does it mean, you will come to your desire in peace? If this is the first time the word peace appears in the Torah, then it doesn't mean, peace doesn't mean making a compromise or, you know, settling an argument between opponents. It doesn't mean to stop a war. And a pirusho, the meaning of peace, there are many possibilities. The future is manifold. And who can say what the future holds, right? And which future we're heading down, so to speak, through the trousers of time. And it bifurcates, and it bifurcates again. So who could predict down which road each individual is going to travel? Maybe it'll evolve like this, maybe like this. Because the future isn't clear. It hasn't been clarified. As we explained back in the first chapter, the first Mishnah. The idea of Elohim, the idea of Adni, the idea of Eya, that these three names of God, they're all associated with Gevura and fear, because they all refer to the future. And the future is something we don't know what is going to happen. V'asiyas ha-sholoim, and then the making peace then, if we understand it now, using this reference, tihavos ha-odom v'ha-oilam, it's bringing a person or bringing the world Lahamatorah Mavukish, to the desired end, to the goal. Dafka. K'moyrotzen Avraham Avinu. So now if we go, we can even reconcile this with what Rashi was saying. Rashi is saying that Avraham's ultimate desire wasn't just for the world to recognize God, but it was for his own family to do so. So that's the meaning of Sholoim, that your father will become a believer too. and will come to the truth. Or that Avraham himself will come to his desire, which he worked for and longed for all his life. So now shalom doesn't mean peace in the sense that we've understood it till now, but rather to the peace of mind that comes with the satisfaction of lifelong ambition and goal. The word chokhmah, so one of the seven concepts associated with the seven double letters is chokhmah. So the first time we encounter, this is note number three, the first time we encounter chokhmah in the Torah is where God says to Moshe to command Bezalel to make the clothing for Aaron, that I have filled him with the spirit of wisdom, for also is big day Aaron, and let them make the clothing, the vestments for the high priest, for the Kohen Godel. So the question is, how come we don't find the necessity for Chochmah until we get to the clothing of the Kohen Gadol? There's a medrash that says, Vayorach es reach begodov. When Rivka told Yaakov that he needs to disguise himself as his brother Esav and go and trick his father Yitzchak by bringing him this dish that she had made, and he said, Ulayim Hasheni Ovi, maybe my father will touch me and he'll know that I'm not Esav. And she said, here, take this clothing. And these were the clothes of Esav. The Torah tells us that when Yaakov came into the room, by Yorach Esreach Begodav, Yitzchak smelled the smell of his clothing, and he said, Re'ei Reach Benik Reach Hasoda, look, my son, he smells like the smell of the field, where it says it was the smell of Gan Eden. So that's the first time that we find the idea of Begodim and the smell of clothing. So here in Shmois, God says, tell Bezalel, whom I have filled with Chochmah, to make Begodim. So the Medrash is a very interesting Medrash there, when it talks about, it says, Vayevarcheu Yitzchak blessed Yaakov. As soon as he smelled the clothing, he blessed him. So the Medrash says, what was it that Yitzchak smelled? Kegon Yosef Meshise V'yokum Ishtzroiris. Yitzchak smelled the smell of these two descendants of Yaakov who came in with him. You know, when Yaakov came into his father, he came in to steal the blessings, right? Yaakov was really aware of what he was doing, that there was no excuse for what he was doing. He was following his mother's command and advice, and he was doing what he had to do, but he knew that he was doing a very bad thing. So in with him, in with Yaakov, came all those sparks of bad Jews, of Jews who can steal from their father and tell a barefaced lie, and all those things that we think to ourselves, oi, I hope my child doesn't do this to me, right? So Yaakov comes in to lie to his father and to steal and cheat his father. So with Yaakov come in all those Yidden who can lie and cheat, right? So the Medrash says that in with Yaakov came two men, Yosef Meshisa and Yokum Ishtzroiris. So the Medrash tells the story, who was this Yosef Meshisa? When the Romans were about to sack the temple and they wanted to break in to the temple mount, Omru, they said, Yikones mehem ubohem techilu. So they were, let's face it, they were afraid. They knew they were in a very sacred and beautiful, untouched place. They were in the holies, the holy of holies. They were afraid to desecrate it. And so they said to themselves, ha, let's get a Jew to do it. Let's get one of their own to desecrate, to violate, to penetrate, to do the doings. And so if there's any, you know, if there's any wrath that's going to be falling down here, you know, you get this image of the Indiana Jones movie and the Raiders of the Lost Ark, you know, and they want to open this ark, so they dress somebody up as a Kohen Gadol, right? A similar idea. So, what do? They get this Yosef Mishisa, who was a thief and a cheat and an all-round bad person. Omer Lei, they said to him, "Ooh, you go up first. Umadat mapik didoch, whatever you bring out of there, you can keep." So they're thinking to themselves, if there are any giant, you know, granite balls that are come rolling out there, or spinning, you know, flashing knives or whatever it is, let him get it. Nichnas, so he went in, because he wasn't scared, right? He's Yosef Mishisa. He says, "I'm not scared," right? Nichnas, he goes in, v'hoitzi menoira shalzov, and he brings out the gold menoira, whether it's the gold menoira that was in the sanctuary, or a gold menoira, doesn't say, but menoira shalzov. Omri loy, so they saw him coming out there unscathed, that, you know, they regretted having come to this, you know, bargain with him, and they said, "Ein darke shel hedyad lihishtamish bezu. This is a much too expensive piece of finery for a commoner. You know, you give this to us." El olzman tinyonis, go in again. Umadat mapik didoch, and whatever you bring out this time, you can keep. V'loy kibel olav, so he refused. Omer of Pinchas. Rav Pinchas said, they promised to give him 3 years of taxes, he refused. Omer, he said, it's not enough, it's not enough that I raged my God, provoked God, pam achas, once, then I'm going to do it again. You know, the first time I did it out of bravado, out of macho, out of what, but I'm going to do it again for you? No way. Ma osuloi, what did they do to him? Nosno isib chamor shachroshim, they nailed him to a sawhorse and tortured him. Hoye mitzavach, and he was crying, v'oime vai, woe is me, oi, shechasti laboiri, woe is me that I angered my creator. So when Yaakov Avinu came to steal the blessings from his father, so these thieves, they came in with him, and when Yitzchak was smelling the clothing of Yaakov, he was really smelling. So the word begodov could be read as boigdov, the betrayers. And when Yaakov came in, Yosef caught a whiff of the worst Jews, right? The boigdim, those who would betray even their own religion, their people, their God, and they would be the first to go into the sanctuary and steal and desecrate and so on, right? And with them came the smell of Gan Eden, because even in the worst Jew there's the smell of Gan Eden. And that's when Yitzchak blessed Yaakov, Vayivarchehu, when he smelled the worst Jew. So the word beged has with it the connotation of the word boged. So now, if we go back to the parsha in Shmois, where Bezalel is being instructed to make the clothing of the high priest, we can understand it anew. So, Dvar Hashem to Moshe, when God speaks to Moshe, Sheitzav al Bezalel lahachnis oisei, he commanded Bezalel, he says, "I have given you the chochmah to make the clothing of Aaron." But Aaron represents all the Jewish people. He comes to atone for all the Jewish people. And so Aaron, in his clothing, he has to carry the aroma of all the highest and the lowest, the greatest and the worst. And so chochmah, we now find, is associated with beged, with the making of clothing, and that clothing contains the smell of Gan Eden, which contains tzaddikim and rishayim, the righteous and the wicked. And so it has within it the paradox that even the greatest have some weakness, and even the weakest have some greatness. Note number four, the fourth concept is oisher, wealth. V'yesoidoi, the first time that the word wealth appears in the Torah, Yaakov says to his wives, what should we do? Shall we leave? You know, your father's not going to let me go, and this and that. And they said, Kol ha'oishah shehitzel Hashem me'avinu lonuhu. All the wealth that God has taken from our father and given to you is really ours anyway. So let's just leave, right? Issa b'gemora. And that's, the Gemara says, Hayne d'omer lehu Rova libnei mechuzah. Rova gave some good advice to the people of his town. He said, Oikiru l'neshaychu ki heichud tis asru. Honor your wives so that you may become wealthy. So wealth comes to the house, the home, because of the wife, Azoizok Rov. And we see here that Rochel and Leah both said to Yaakov, the wealth that belongs to our father is ours. It came to only came to him because of us. Because Oisher and Kovoid, wealth and honor, however you understand wealth and however you understand the concept of honor, but the two of them are intertwined and bound together. V'tanu Rochel v'Leah, and Rochel and Leah's argument was Shemitam aviem Lovan, that because their father Lovan nohag bem derech bizoyen, that he treated them with such contempt, v'loy kibdan, and he didn't honor them. When Yaakov came to Lovan and he said, can I marry Rochel bitcha k'tana? You know, he didn't say, of course you can marry my daughter, and here, you know, I've put this away for her dowry, right? Instead, he lets Yaakov work for him for 7 years unpaid. Whoever heard of such a thing? It was a really disrespectful thing to his daughter, right? And then another 7 years for Leah. So Mamela, so they say, because our father treats us with such disrespect, so what right does he have to his wealth? So then we understand wealth as not just being money, but wealth as being something associated with respect and honor. Chen, grace. The first time we encounter the word chen in the Torah is noyach motzo chen. Noyach, in fact, the word noyach is chen. It's the same letters. Noyach found grace in the eyes of God. The last time we find chen in scripture, it's Tehi Esther Noises chen. What exactly is chen? It's a very undefined. How can you explain what chen is when, by definition, it has no definition? We'll be talking about it at greater length. Zera, seed. The first time we encounter the word Zera, which says, Vayoyim HaShem, God said, Tatshe Ha'oretz, let the earth sprout. Desha, vegetation. Esev Mazriya, Zera, plants bearing seeds. So, there is the idea of seed as being something whereby the earth or the plants or vegetation recreates. Things recreate each other. And there's another kind of thing that we call seed, and that is the concept of children. As we see in the end of Pashas Noach, it says she had a child, and she called him Shes, because God has given me another seed. So why would a child be called a seed, but we don't find with animals that young animals are called Zera? Mitzvah will be talking about this. Memsholo, this is the concept of dominion. And we find the word Memsholo appears in the book of Micah, to you it will come the former dominion, Lebas Yerushalayim, to the daughter of Yerushalayim. And we will be talking about this at greater length. So now, let's look at the second Mishnah. Ve'achrei sheyesh l'sheva kufulois t'chuna shniois, and since the, each of the double letters has a second nature, a distinct aspect to it, yesh lem gam kin efsherios l'hara, so they also now have the possibility of the second, which, as we've talked about earlier, on the second day, you have ma'im elyonim, ma'im tachtonim, you have distinctions, you have the split, you have the idea of good and evil. Ki hafeichim nimshochim min hakotze lakotze, because opposites can also be extremes. Ochein atchunas hafeichim shebemishne zu, what we're going to be talking about here are not exactly opposites. Here in our Mishnah, we're going to be talking about substitutions, because we're not really talking about from extreme to extreme. As the Mishnah says, and this is the Mishnah, and as we said earlier, that each of these seven letters can be spoken in two tongues, beis or vase, gimel, jimel, dalet, thalet, kaf, chaf, pei, fei, resh and resh. I don't know, I'm not sure, nobody's quite sure how the resh and resh goes, and tuf and suf. So these are the double letters that have double expressions. Rach v'kosho, gentle and hard. Gibor v'cholosh, strong and weak. Kufulois, they're doubles. Shehen temurois, that are substitutes. What do we mean? Temuras chayim moves, the substitution of life is death. Temuras shalom ra, substituting peace is evil. Tmuras chochma yivelis, substituting wisdom is folly. Tmuras oisha oini, the substituting wealth is poverty. Tmuras chen chiyur, substituting grace is ugliness. Tmuras zera shmamo, substituting seed is desolation. And tmuras memsholo avdus, substituting dominion, slavery. So this is note number 8, v'shtei l'shoines kosher v'rofe, the idea of that the seven letters that represent the seven vertical columns, that they have a hard and a soft, they are the equivalent of an up and a down, because there's two ways of flowing. So when it flows upwards, it flows hard. When it flows downwards, it flows soft. Tumuras chayim moves, substituting life, death. Lahovin soid chayim hamoves, to understand the secret of life and death. The Issa, we learn in the Medrash, v'yikhu elecho por aduma, and this we learned when we were learning the Meha Shiloyach. God says to Moshe, let them bring to you the red heifer, por aduma tmimo, shaloi olo holeha oil, perfectly red, which has never carried a yoke. Omalei HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe, God says to Moshe, L'chu ani megale tami Torah, to you I'm going to reveal the reasons for the Torah, aval acherim chuka, but for everybody else it's the statute. And so the parsha of the Paraduma of the Red Heifer begins, Zois chukas haTorah, this is the statute. En cholushus lehare, you have no right to try and give it reasons, and it's almost the paradigm of a mitzvah without a reason is the whole thing of the por aduma, the red heifer. Shemati mimoyri Reb Shloime Zichrono Livracha, I heard from my Rebbe Shloime, his yortzeit is coming this weekend. Shemishum sheRab Moshe Rabbeinu lo yitom tam avodah zorah miyomav, because Moshe never tasted in his life the taste of avodah zorah. He never tasted in his life pagan idolatry, idol worship, not even when he was a baby. He refused to nurse at the breast of a midwife, of a wet nurse who was not Jewish, and so Miriam had an opportunity to call her mother, as we read in the beginning of the book of Exodus. Right? So Moshe Rabbeinu, he had nothing, he was not connected in any way at all to the worship of the golden calf, or anything to do with idolatry. V'lo nichshu b'masa egel glal kein ho yetoyim tam chaim gam be'efa pura. Moshe Rabbeinu could taste the life even in the ashes of the red heifer. You know, for us, the paradigm of having no taste or tasting of something death is ashes. You take something and you reduce it to its elements and its minerals and its burnt carbon and so on. What does it taste of, right? It does not taste alive. The truth is, though, the same life force that runs through the living cow runs through the dead minerals. It's the same. There are no laws of physics that are happening here that are not happening there, right? So Moshe Rabbeinu could taste the life in everything, even in what we consider to be dead. V'af al pi shelonu pshutei om ein tam b'achilas eifer kidu, and even though we don't have a taste for ashes, halei chasorin hibonu, the chasorin is in us. It's our problem. V'ele loy pogamnu b'tiyum tam avodah zorah, and had we not damaged our own senses by tasting avodah zorah, loy hoya nele mimenu tamzu, so we wouldn't have lost the ability to taste the life in the ashes. Ubupora aduma tomis soida chaim v'hamoves, and in this red heifer are buried all the secrets of life and death. Shishneim ke'echod ashloyo, that both life and death are just the same illusion. Ube'emes ein misa, the truth is there's no such thing as death. K'mo yishivus b'sefer me'ah shiloyach, like we learned in the sefer me'ah shiloyach. This is what he says. God says to Moshe, tell them to bring you. Hainu, what does it mean, bring to you? Why didn't you say, let them bring? Why v'yikru elecho, they should take to you? Hainu l'madregis Moshe Rabbeinu, hanetz b'kol Yisrael. Every Yid has Moshe Rabbeinu inside him, who never tasted the time of the egel. Ki Moshe Rabbeinu ho yeshorish chachmo shel kol Yisrael. Because Moshe Rabbeinu is the source of the wisdom of every Yid. Inside us, we are still connected to the Sefira of Chochmah because Moshe Rabbeinu connected us. V'loy nizbar etam poro adum, and he knew the taste, because the word taste is the same as the word for reason. Omelo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, in the very first line there, God says to Moshe, L'chua ani megale tamei Torah, to you I'm going to reveal the reason, but it's also to you I'm going to reveal the taste of the Torah. But for others it's a chukah, right? So Moshe Rabbeinu doesn't just get given the reason for the red heifer. He gets given the taste, because the word for taste is the same as the word for reason. And you know what it tastes like? It tastes like music, because the word for melody is also the word tam. The trope in the Torah is called the tam, right? So Moshe Rabbeinu, he knows the tam of the Pora Aduma, and there's a Moshe Rabbeinu inside us. So God says, V'yikru elecho, let them bring to the you which is in them. Ki Moshe Rabbeinu yishoyish chochem shel kol Yisro, v'loy nizbar atam Pora Adunu, ki Pora roim is al chayim evurorim, because what is it that Pora Aduma is hinting at? It's hinting at pure life, the life force. Adumo, the redness, moira al tekifus, this is like power, red. Tamimo, and it says it should be perfectly red, that it should be absolutely perfect in its power. You know, sometimes a thing can be so living that it kills itself, right? I mean, what is cancer, right? Cancer is cells start to grow. They start to repeat. They ignore those oncogenes which tell them to stop growing, and they say we've got the command to be living and to reproduce pur vu, and that's what we're gonna do, and no, there's poro adumo temimo. There's a kind of perfectly red poro adumo which its life force is not out of control. It's immensely powerful, infinitely powerful, but still obeys the laws. So the next thing, Ashein Bamum, that has no blemish, Hainu Shein Bechachmas Yisro Shem Chesorin, that in the Chachma of the Yid there has to be no blemish. Raki Chachma Mevureres, it has to be like really clarified and pure. Ashalai Ola Ola HaOil, that has never borne a yoke. Hainu Shem Oilem Loi Hoyu Tachas Shum Shibud, the Jewish people have never been under any yoke. Rak Hashem Yisborach Moshe Aleim Levadoi, God has always ruled us. We have only ever been under God's dominion, and those people who think that they are being ruled by their evil inclination and so on, it's not true. Ashaloi Ola Aleo Oil means that we have only ever been under the yoke of God. K'moshe Kosev, as it's written in the Pasuk in Zechariah, V'hoya Kashaloi Zanachtim, and they will feel as though I have never abandoned them. Right? God promises that when the end of time comes, it will be as though we had never been abandoned, because, of course, we feel very much abandoned, right? But God is going to show us that we never were, and we're going to feel as though we never were. And how can that happen? Zayizbar k'moshi Yosef im'achim, like Joseph and his brothers. Afsho elahem tzar. The brothers were in tremendous pain. They were all stressed out, right? They were in deep trouble. And then Yosef revealed himself to them as their brother. Then they realized they never really had been in pain. They had only imagined that they were in pain. I mean, if you were to say 10 years after Yaakov and the whole family has come down to Egypt, and then you would say, look back and remember that time when we stood as 10 brothers, we stood in front of this Egyptian ruler, and we thought the end of all time had come, and we thought our father was going to die of heartbreak, and the family was never going to be whole again, and Binyamin may be taken into slavery, and Shimon had already been imprisoned, and Yehuda was begging with his life, and in fact there was a feeling that if they couldn't somehow repair that the world was going to come to an end, and God was going to have to start from the beginning all over again, and so on. And then they realized they never really had been in danger. The whole thing was an illusion. And so God says, you know, at the end of time you're going to realize I was tricking you. There was a reason why I was tricking you, but you know, and we are actually going to feel, so that's what was going on. And then in the future God is going to show Shigam lefishoo, that even for a time this is the Ishbitz. This is a quote from the Ishbitz in Parshas Chukas. In the future, God is going to show us that the pain we suffered was an illusion also. How this plays out, you can't. When you're in the illusion, that's the whole point. You can't imagine that you're in an illusion. The Simeres, so what we're really saying is, Yod Yesh, we still have inside us that infinitesimal chokhma, which is the Moshe Rabbeinu inside us, that we can still taste the life in the living, and we can still know the reason and understand the reason of the Porah Adum of the Red Heifer. So now we can understand when we say that the substitution for life is death, we don't mean the opposite of life is death. They're not opposites. The truth is that death is somebody who dies as pisam niftochim enav. Death is an opening of the eyes. Kilo esiru masve me'al ponav, as though a veil is removed. V'yotzi me'olam achoshech, and you come out of the world of darkness. Alma deshikra, the world of untruth. Lo'olam ha'or, to the world of light. Alma dekshoit, lo'olam ha'emes, the world of truth. So life and death are not opposites. They're substitutions for one another, and they're both equally illusory. So Chaim and Moves. Chaim and Moves, life and death, as we will be learning, the one who really understands life and death is our mother Ruth. Tmuras Sholem Ra, the substitution of peace is evil. Loishet Tmuras Sholem Ketota, the opposite of peace is strife, right? But we're not talking about opposites from end to end, from east to west, 180 degrees. We're talking about substitution, which means that they can sometimes pass for one another, right? Tmuras Sholem Ra, the tmura, the substituting peace, evil. What does that mean? Loishet Tmuras Sholem Ketota, ki ein edonim b'mishne seinu b'mesogim hefechim. We're not talking about opposites. U'pirushoi b'tziruf mash b'yanu b'mishne, according with what we said previously in the Mishnah. Shasiyas Sholem, that making peace does not mean to take two opposing sides and make them join. It means havos ha'odom v'ha'olam lehamatora mevukesh, bringing a person, an individual, a group, or bringing the whole world to the desired goal. That's the meaning of peace. K'moy rotzen Avram Avinu sheterach ovev yovei ledas em. It's like Avram Avinu's desire that his father come to the truth. K'moy shepirush Rashi, as Rashi explained, oy sheba Avram letachlis cheftzoi, or Avram coming to his desire, whatever it was that he worked all his life. So then Ra means not getting, not achieving that, not being given that. Sholem and Ra is Bechinas Toma, as we'll be learning, the person who teaches us how this path is walked is Tamar, the daughter-in-law of Yehuda, the grandmother also of King David. Tmuras Chochma Iveles, substituting wisdom, folly. Hine shemati pam echochem echad pirush minas hiveles. I once heard, what does it mean, folly? Give me an example. He said, echad yoytze mi beise. Somebody goes out of his house, v'noifel l'toich bor b'shus haram, and he falls nebuch into a manhole, open manhole on the street. Shavua oivolav, a week passes, v'kamim mitusei, he gets up from his bed, selea al yerecha, he's limping on his thigh, right? V'yotze mepesach besa, he leaves his house, walks out of the house, v'noifel oilapam, v'toich oisam bom reshusser rabbi, and falls into the same open manhole again. Chodesh yomim oivrim olav, a month passes, v'hu al erz dvoi, and he's, you know, in his sick bed. And he gets up and he's walking on his crutches, doing a little therapy in the fresh air. And he falls into the same hole again. And here he's asking with bitter tears, why is this happening to me? To anybody who looks at him, he's a criminal mishugan, right? What do you mean why it's happening to you? You do the same thing, you get the same results. What do you mean you walked out, you fell in one time, all right, so it was an accident, but the second time, how come you didn't take care? The third time, what can we assume? You must have thrown yourself in. He says, no, I didn't. It was an accident. I never saw it. I didn't know it, you know? In Kolzeu Ishahu Eina, that person himself doesn't take any responsibility for what's happened. He thinks it's an accident. He thinks he's nebuch, an unfortunate individual who's cursed with bad luck, that he keeps falling into the same hole. This kind of senseless stupidity. Have a beginner's Ishmael. It's like it's kind of a high kind of Iveles, right? It's at the same level of Yeshme Ayin, something from nothing, that the Chochmah is. You know, it seems to be coming from an infinitely stupid place, right? But where does Chochmah come from? Chochmah, which says Yeshme Ayin, it comes from an infinite place. You can say it's very easy to imagine that they come from the same place. Chochme veles, wisdom and folly, is bechinas yurcheved, as we will see. This pathway is walked by our mother yurcheved. Tmuras oishe oini, substituting wealth, poverty. Alidarsh ben zoyme, we learn a mishnah in Ovos, ezo osher semech bechelkoi, who is wealthy, who rejoices in his lot. Lo shiyesh lehar benechosim. Not wealthy doesn't mean you have a lot, you own a lot, property or whatever. And it's a semech b'mashesh. Maybe you don't have anything, but you're happy with what you don't have, right? V'tzmuras oini. So then you can understand the substituting oini. It doesn't mean wealthy doesn't mean have a lot and poor have nothing, because poor doesn't mean she'ein loy. Poor doesn't mean the person who doesn't have things, property, or owns nothing. El sheyeshli, you could be very wealthy. Ve'en samech b'chelko, but you're not happy with what you have. Oishen oini, the mother who teaches us about wealth and poverty, is Rachel. Tmuras chein chiyur, substituting grace, ugliness. Hachein v'achiyay min advurim haskuliyim. Grace and ugliness, these are belong to that category of personal preference. Sheyesh lisvaker chalein, you can't argue with somebody about whether something is beautiful or ugly. Limdoid oison, you can't measure them. Oil hagdiren, you can't define beauty and ugliness. Kimisha libo noitele is a tzad, because whoever's heart bends in a certain direction, moitzechein bo is a tzad, you find beauty or grace or favor that direction. And so these two are again not opposites, they're substitutes for one another. And the mother who teaches us about this is Rivka. Tmuras zera shmoma, substituting seed desolation. We find in the Torah it tells us, God says, I'm going to gradually get rid of the people in the land of Canaan, because if I get them rid of them all the time, you know, all at once, then you're going to enter the land, going to be desolate. Pen tia ha'oretz shmomo, maybe the land will become desolate. V'rob alechu chayes ha'soda, and so the beasts, the wild animals, they will take over. So bit by bit, I will eject the aboriginal inhabitants of the land of Canaan in front of you. Rashi says, shmomo, desolation. Reikonis mibnei odam. When it becomes empty of humans, lefisha'atem ma'at, because you're so few, ve'en b'chem k'dei l'malei, so see, there's not enough of you to fill the whole land of Canaan. So I'm not going to allow the aboriginal inhabitants to disappear all at once. So then, desolation suggests, so zera, seed, is the tikva, the hope, sheyifra v'yirba, that the hope that one is going to increase and multiply and populate the land is seed, the word zera, and shmoma is the expectation of not doing so. Not despair, but despair of hope, right? Zera is having that hope, and shmoma is not having that hope. And this is taught to us by our mother Leah. And tmuras memshola avdus, substituting dominion, slavery. The Rambam says, in talking about in the nusach of the Haggadah, says, had we, and this is the Haggadah that we have in our nusach of the Haggadah, had God not brought us out of Egypt, we would still be slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt. So the question is, how could we still be slaves if Pharaoh's long gone? The Egyptians who were there are not the Egyptians who are there today. These are Bnei Ishmael, they're Arabs. The Egyptians who were there in the time of Abraham and Sarah, they were definitely not Arabs, right? They were black, and they were Nubian, they were Ethiopian, and they were completely different people, right? So why would we be saying every year, if God hadn't brought us out of there, we would still be slaves to Pharaoh in Egypt? Pharaoh in Egypt are long gone. So the answer is that it's not, slavery isn't about a person that you're enslaved to. It's the feeling inside, right? And slavery can be a very beautiful thing. Like David HaMelech says, Ani avdecha ben amasecha, I'm your slave God. I'm the daughter of your maidservant, right? So slavery and freedom, dominion and slavery don't mean what they seem to mean, and they're not opposites, right? They can actually be part of the same thing. And this we will learn from our mother Esther. Thank you.